Welcome to London's Brick Lane, the perfect model of a multicultural Britain. Tonight, though, we make the case that the concept of different groups living side by side is failing. It's time to rewrite the script and create a new blueprint for Britain. One country, one culture? Sounds radical? Welcome to Minefield.
I don't need no TV, I don't need no news. All I need is a bump and beat, the mambo with my blues.
Please welcome your ring mistress for tonight, June Sapong.
Thank you very much, everyone. Now, tonight we are going to convince you that there is an alternative to multicultural Britain. Over the last 50 years, we've been required to tolerate difference. Different dress, different language, different culture, different religion. Indeed, we've been told it's good for us, but we say the model no longer works. To help present the case for change, let me introduce you to the rest of the Minefield team. Top criminal barrister, John Cooper, and philosopher, Julian Baghini. Hello, gentlemen. Hello. Now, tonight the three of us are going to put aside all our own personal views. We're going to think the unthinkable. We're going to invite you to do the same. Now, John's used to winning arguments through his powers of persuasion. He's used to changing people's minds. Tonight he's going to try and change yours. So over to you, John.
Thank you, June. Well, June, before I start, can I introduce Dr. David Hornsby, who's actually going to do a bit of teaching for us. Dr. Hornsby, thank you. Hello, good to see you. Now, you're going to write on this blackboard, aren't you, all the descriptions and languages that teachers at the White Hart School in Tottenham would have to learn and write if they taught there. Is that right?
I'm going to try and keep it very, very simple. I'm just going to do my name is David in about 58 different languages.
Well, the best of luck. How many languages?
58.
See you next week. Thank you. Right,
well,
it's my job, ladies and gentlemen, to actually put to you the most difficult and painful choices that you're probably ever going to have to make. What I'm going to argue is that multiculturalism in our society is now a lost cause. It causes segregation, it causes boundaries, it causes dangerous racism. It effectively has no place in modern British society. Now, you're going to have some painful choices. You're going to have some difficult choices, but I think you're up for it, and I want you to listen to what we've got to say and keep your minds open. Now, multiculturalism over the last few years has produced some great stuff for us. Link things in, no problem. A large cobra now is not an animal in the street. It's a log you have at an Indian restaurant, that's fine. But what we're concerned about is the dangerous dark side of multiculturalism, the fundamentalist Christians. Other sections of religions which come out of the dark holes of our society and cause damage. We'll be arguing, get rid of religious symbols in public life. We'll be arguing, ban the faith schools, keep children's minds clear. We will be arguing, effectively, end community areas which turn into ghettos and effectively limit the freedom of people in our society. We'll be arguing effectively for freedom of individuals to do what they want without fear, without trepidation. We'll be asking you, during the course of this programme, to have the guts to say and do what our politicians haven't the guts to do. That's what your job is tonight. Let's see whether you're up for it. Thank you.
So that's the radical idea, but what do the audience think? So tell us what you think on all of this then.
We're taking it too far. We don't need to ban religious schools. We don't need to ban religious symbols. We're a society where 71% of us profess to be Christian in the last census. That doesn't mean that everybody goes to church, but we're fundamentally a Christian society. Other religions, and most other religions, have come to this country, have integrated well, and there isn't a problem. People get on with their religion, we get on with our religion, or not.
Yeah.
And I just feel that after 7/7, there was no great rising tide of Islamophobia, even though a lot of people are trying to put forward that idea. And I think we get on pretty well. I think we're a pretty tolerant, modern society.
So you
society,
think it's working as it is?
Well, no, I don't think we need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think there's a massive difference between wearing a crucifix at school and wearing the full veil.
Brilliant.
Which the girl from the Luton wanted to
Fantastic.
Do. Which I'm delighted to say the Law Lords aren't going to allow.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much,
no problem.
John. Thank you for that. Well, that's the view from both sides, but let's bring in Mr. Thinker. Julian Baggini, what's your take on it all?
Well, you see, what I'm interested in here, June, is why it is we're having this debate now, at this particular moment. Because, you know, what's changed? And it's not ethnic diversity. I mean, Britain's always been an ethnically diverse country. I mean, in fact, you know, we were built on illegal immigration. Romans, Normans, Vikings. They came, they saw, they conquered, they copulated, and we're all their mongrel children. So it's not ethnic diversity which is the issue here. And it's definitely not skin colour either, let's be clear about that. The crux of this is religion. Now, why is religion the big deal? Well, after 9/11, after 7/7, there were a lot of people thinking that the clash of religious cultures in the world means that we've got a fundamental clash of values. And the problem there is that you can't just say to everyone, well, you have your values, we have ours, everyone lives together. If, for example, one set of people say it's intolerable to insult religion and another set say it's intolerable to keep any sort of speech under control, then you've got a clash, a control, and we have to find a way of resolving this and settling it. And that's a difficult issue, which I'm hoping we're going to sort through tonight.
OK, so here's a quick question. Don't think too hard about this. If you like living in a country which encourages multiculturalism, then hold up the green card. If you don't, then hold up your red card. Oh. Well, I see an awful lot of green cards. So I think it's a unanimous vote that most people here enjoy living in a country that encourages multiculturalism. So that's a snapshot of what the audience think. But now we will try and convince them to change their minds. We're going to try and make them think the unthinkable, and we'll see if they've been swayed in any way at the end of the show. And Dr. Hornsby's still at it, isn't he, John?
He certainly is. How many have you got down there so far?
Up to about 16 or 17 at the moment, John. 4, 8, 12, 15, 17.
Good grief again. Well, there it is. But the good thing is that this has now been banned in the White Hart Lane school because the new headmaster has said it's rubbish. So therefore, one language, English, so everyone can understand exactly what's going on. So thank goodness now you can wipe the board clean. June.
John. Now, John's laid out a pretty clear idea of what does and doesn't work in multicultural Britain today. We're going to look at his model now in a little bit more detail. There are four basic areas under the spotlight tonight. First up, we're going to look at how we look. Over to you, John.
Thank you. Well, this is the line that we used to have in police stations, identity parades, all the usual suspects. Let's bring them on now if we can. And what I'm arguing during the course of our debate today is effectively all these symbols should actually go. What's your symbol you're wearing? You have no symbol, therefore you can stay. But we want to kind of remove this symbol. We want to remove this symbol. And this one as well. And also that. And, yeah, that as well. There is no difference between any of these. They are divisive and they separate people. Thank you very much indeed. Shabina. I was going to sit next to you. I wonder if I could sit up. Pretty bad week for you, wasn't it, last week?
Well, yeah, it's been quite upsetting.
But it's the right decision, isn't it? Why should you be any different in school to anybody else?
No, I believe I shouldn't be oppressed. I believe I should wear what I feel religiously. I feel obliged to wear this, so I feel, what's so wrong if I do wear it?
What about people that perhaps haven't got your sense of control, your confidence? What about young people who may be forced to wear what you wear? Surely people at school should all wear the same things and do what they like later, but not at school.
No, I believe that yes, there is forces. There are loads of Muslim women are being forced to wear the headscarf, no doubt. However, stopping other people from the freedom to manifest their religion doesn't solve the problem of pressure.
Yes, but your freedom is someone else's pressure, isn't it? Why should you, at your stage, necessarily be able to dictate through what you wear what other people might be forced to wear?
Yeah, but why should my freedom be taken away just because other people are being pressured and can't speak out for themselves?
You can make your own decisions behind closed doors and when you're older, but not at school. Should you agree with that?
Well, I don't see why I have to leave my religion at home and not take it with me outside. I mean, this is who I am.
But are they your beliefs? Because you come tonight, for instance, with your PR representatives, your barrister. Who's driving this, you or them?
Well, it's me. It's my decision. You know, I tell them if I want to go to court or not. And, you know, I sincerely tell them that this is sincerely what I believe and what I want to practice.
Well, there it is. We'll hear what they say later on. Thank you.
Okay, so Saeed, tell me what you think of that. Do you think that she should be allowed to wear the hijab to school?
No, I don't. I don't. And I think the Court of the House of Lords was absolutely right in its decision. I think the key facts of this case are that Shabina Begum wanted to do something which she felt was her religious duty, but right. Four Islamic institutions, including the Islamic Cultural Centre in London and the Muslim Trust, and two mosques in Luton, four Islamic institutions of high repute opined that this was not necessary. I think if we had gone the way that Ms. Begum wanted us to go, yeah, it would have opened the doors to fundamentalists bringing pressure to bear upon other Muslim women in that school to wear the same.
Why do you think that would have made other Muslim women within the school feel pressured to wear it? Surely it wouldn't have affected them. It's her personal choice.
Well, it's certainly the case that during the course of these events and during the litigation, there were staged protests or demonstrations by very vociferous, threatening young Muslim men outside the school gates. And I think that can only be construed as a threat.
Okay. Well, let's see what Shabina thinks. Shabina, what do you think of Saeed's comments? Because he's completely, totally against you on this one, honey.
Well, first of all, I see, you know, he said that there are most girls that said, you know, I'm just making a fuss for no reason. You know, I can wear the shalwar kameez. I feel, say if there was five people in a room and they were forced to eat something and there's one vegetarian, and if he said, you know, no, hold on, I can't eat meat, I have to eat vegetarian. And the dinner lady said, well, sorry, I consulted all these other four people. They said it's okay. I mean, who is to interpret my religion?
Right. So for you think it's definitely a personal choice?
Yes, definitely. So what you know, it's not something so out of the ordinary. It's just, it is something that many Muslims follow as well. It is a fundamental belief, although there are many other opinions.
And so what will you do now that you've lost?
I'm at college now and I'm studying my A-levels.
So for you, that's done then?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, John Gaunt, you've got a very strong opinion on this, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I worked in Luton for 5.5 years, and there's a large Muslim community there. And as I understand the case, the majority of Muslims in Luton think this girl is completely and utterly wrong. And her comparison with vegetarianism is absolutely ludicrous, childish, and immature. She was allowed to wear the tunic. The headmistress herself is Muslim. She's just being used by extremists. Extremists who are giving Muslims a bad name. There's a lot of decent people in Luton who are being let down by her and her followers. Listen, lady, you're at school. Get the uniform on. Enough concessions have been made to you. If you don't like it, go to the school down the road. We shouldn't have to bend to people like you. You're an extremist.
I think it's very sad that people think this shallow and they think of me like this. I mean, I don't regard myself as an extreme. Just because I wear the jilbab, is this extreme? You know, just because I want to manifest my religion, is this extreme? And to say that, you know, put on the uniform, just do as they say, why should I compromise? Why don't the school compromise? You know, and also
the school has compromised. You have to compromise because you're at school. When my daughter goes to school, she can't wear earrings. That's the rules. You, when you're at school, were a child. You should play by the rules. End of story. They did compromise. They compromised massively for you, but it wasn't enough for you, was it? Or not enough for your brother or the extremists who are behind you. And that's the fundamental problem here.
Sorry, you don't know. You don't actually know if there's extremists behind me. I have clearly stated that there is no one behind me. There is no one forcing me to do this. I am a, you know, I'm clever enough to understand and make the choice of my own if I want to wear the jilbab or not. And to say, you know, just go to school, I think that's very, really shallow and sad. You're discriminating me. Also, you're oppressing me. If you're going to force me to take my jilbab off, you're oppressing me.
So now, what's your view on religious symbols?
Well, I think there's a very good case for removing religious symbols in public spaces where people, spaces people have to share. It's not actually that radical a suggestion. If you go to a crematorium, for example, these days, there is a lack of religious symbols there so that it can be inclusive of everyone. And I think that's important, that a neutrality in a public space can be inclusive of everyone, including people with no religion. I think that on the question of school uniform, there's some very important personal beliefs that have to be taken seriously there. But a lot of people have a lot of beliefs, and I don't actually see that religion, though strongly held, is any different from any other strongly held belief. And I'd be difficult about making the distinction.
What harm do you think it's doing, though? It's not doing any harm, surely, if people feel that that is a way of expressing themselves. Do you think?
I think there's a right to self-expression, there's a right to manifest deeply held beliefs, as long as it isn't infringing anyone else's liberty and freedom and their right to manifest their deeply held beliefs.
You feel religious symbols do?
I think they can do. Okay. I think they can do.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. Humaira, what's your opinion on all of this?
I think it's been taken to extremes on both sides of the arguments, and I think it's been very badly misrepresented in the media. I think the issue of uniform...
They have blown it.
I think it has, and I think the issue of uniforms is that uniforms, in my experience, are constantly being renegotiated. Yeah. In my son's schools now, they're telling them that the sixth form now have to start wearing uniform, having been allowed not to wear them for lots of years. So uniforms are continuously being renegotiated. I think this case shouldn't have gone to the court. I think the teachers should have been a bit more accommodating, because a new generation of young people are Muslim young women are choosing different ways to express their dress.
But do you think she could have gone to the other school that didn't have a problem with it?
I think she had a right to stay in the school. I think there could have been negotiated between the two, and I think we've been said that there's been manipulated, but I think it's been manipulated equally on the side of secular fundamentalists as well.
Okay.
So I think that I think the public debate is skewed up, and we need to get to what the issue is.
Get to the real issue. Now, Josie, what's your opinion on it?
I think people here are attacking religious symbols because they can't attack the substance of religion. I mean, I'm a secularist, a rationalist. Mm. I look forward to the day when no one wears headscarves. I think the headscarves are symbols of women's oppression. I look forward to the day when there are no crucifixes in public spaces. But you have to win the argument. You can't just kind of say, get rid of these symbols. You have to put forward the argument for secularism. And what's happening now is that secularism is on the defensive. It's a kind of gutlessness. And I think that was behind the French move to ban the headscarves, because French Republican values don't exist anymore. They say, get rid of the symbols of religion, rather than actually to kind of take them on in an argument.
Now, what Sabina Begum can and cannot wear in the classroom has been the subject, as we've seen here today, of much debate in the past week, as has the issue of faith schools. The government recently paved the way for the expansion of these schools, which teach their own curriculum based on the beliefs of a specific religion. Over to you, John.
Thanks again, June. Well, yes, faith schools, what you teach, what you can read. Well, I've got a pretty innocuous book here. We've probably all read it, The Three Little Pigs. Well, what's the problem with this? Well, you'll be interested to know this was banned in the Park Road Junior School, Batley in West Yorkshire. And get this is what it was banned for, because it could offend Muslim children. This is the state we've got, you know? Rubbish. Okay, the next thing we have is James and the Giant Peach. Well, what on earth could be the problem with James and the Giant Peach? Well, banned in some schools. And the reason that it's banned... wait for it, promoted disobedience towards authority figures. Harry Potter, surely not. Harry Potter, banned, wizards, devils and demons are dangerous. Really banned in a school in this country. Let me just go to George Hargreaves, because no doubt he's got a take on this. You like faith schools, don't you?
Yes, I founded a faith school, the East London Christian Choir School in Hackney just 3 years ago.
The Christian Choir School?
Absolutely.
So apart from singing in choirs, what else do you do there?
Well, we teach mathematics, sociology, all the range of...
Do you teach Darwin?
No, we
Why?
Don't. Well, actually, we do refer to Darwin, but we actually teach intelligent design And
you refer to Darwin like kind of like there's Darwin, but it's rubbish. That sort of
we refer to Darwin as evolution as something that is taught but not proven. It's a theory, and that's what happens.
You're
with
a creationist, aren't you?
We are a creationist.
So what do you say? God created everything.
Absolutely. We start from the Bible as our first point of departure,
well,
and
that's absolutely naive, isn't it? Totally naive.
No, I think you'll find there are millions of people around the world who would disagree with you. Well, they call them Christians, funnily enough.
Indeed they do. Even the evolution, then, you don't actually agree with evolution.
I don't believe it's been proven, and I don't believe it. I could give you 160 top scientists around the world. If you go to answersingenesis.org, there's a plug, you'll see a list of 160 scientists, top scientists, who say that evolution is rubbish.
Well, there it is. If you want to go to his school, up to you. Nevertheless, June, over to you.
So, Kwame, is evolution rubbish?
You know, I think that the debate can be really skewed, and I think we can come at it from a very flimsical with a very flimsical attitude. And actually, I think it's not that light a debate.
Yeah.
I don't think it's between whether evolution is correct and creationism is right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're not mutually exclusive.
Oh.
And what sometimes we do is we have the debate and we say, this is right and this is wrong. And I think actually that's why we don't engage. That's why, for instance, I fundamentally disagree with a young woman who said that secularism is on the defensive. That's absolute rubbish.
Right.
That as a nation, that as a world right now, you know, the church has been replaced by the shopping mall. So, you know, we sit there and we you know, I look at the TV and most of the adverts about the religion of buying.
But for you, what was your experience with faith schools? Because you're in favour of them, aren't
yes,
you?
I
didn't
saw,
you send your children
well,
to?
Well, I didn't actually send my children to a faith school. I sent my children to a school that was culturally similar to them. It was a school where
an Afro-Caribbean school.
Yes, it was an African-Caribbean school.
Yeah.
And I sent them there because I wanted them to have a grounding in their own culture. And I also, most importantly, wanted the expectation levels
to be
much higher than I was finding in the state school. The expectation level that I was finding in the Caribbean, expectation level I was finding in Africa. And I wanted that. And so I sent my school there.
You don't think that excludes them from British society?
Well, no, it certainly didn't, because first of all, I felt that I wanted to give them a grounding. That's the most important word. And then, after they were there for maybe 3 or 4 years, I made sure then that they went into mainstream schools.
So and you think it's important to have both?
I think it's important to have both, but I think what's most important, what I think is most important for me is that I do not believe in excuses.
Yeah.
And when the teacher says to me, your child is not doing as well as it should be doing, or your child was bad today, I don't want to have to say, I think it's racism.
Right.
I want to be able to say to my child, your teacher has said you're not doing what
you're doing.
So therefore you're not doing what you're doing. There are no excuses. Let me do it. Let's deal with that.
Right.
And so it's most important for me to have given my children that grounding in their culture
and their
history and in mainstream education.
Okay, fair enough. Now, Rabbi Romaine, Jonathan Romaine.
Hi there.
What's your view on this?
Well, I am a rabbi, as you say, and therefore I do value religion. I think it's very important. But I still am passionately against faith schools because I think there's a higher priority than religious heritage, and that is national social cohesion. Because essentially what faith schools do is they separate children. They separate them, they segregate them, and therefore ultimately they're going to bring up a whole generation of children who are fragmented. And I know that some of them do teach about other religions and other cultures, but there's nothing that can compare to actually meeting with another child. And and otherwise, you see, they don't know each other and it spirals into ignorance and suspicion. I, as a rabbi, sent my children to a general school because I wanted them to sit next to a Sikh or do homework with a Hindu.
Right.
Or walk home with a Methodist or whatever. Because for me, the priority is getting to know and integrating.
Did that work for you with your children?
Pardon?
Has that worked?
Yes, I think they're better Jews because they know other cultures. And frankly, I think the Muslims, Hindus and Christians have learned. And by the way, you know, it's not just about the children. It's about the parents. If you separate the children, you separate the parents. They don't meet outside the school gates at PTAs. And you've cut a whole swathe through society. And it's precisely because I believe, as a rabbi, you should love your neighbour as yourself. You can only do that if you know your neighbour.
Okay.
And schools should build bridges rather than erect barriers.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Romaine. A very passionate subject there. So, Julian, what do you make of all of this?
Well, the social division point, I think, is a very powerful one. But there's also that underlying point about what's the appropriate subjects for schools to teach. And a lot of the people who support faith schools are going to say that there's no strong difference between faith and proven facts. For example, they'll say that evolution is not a proven fact, it's a matter of faith. The mistake there, I think, is that it's not true that everything is either certain fact or a matter of faith. And what school should be teaching are those things that we know, or we have very, very strong evidence to show that they're true. Other things, opinions, teach about them. Teach people that people have their religious beliefs. But the idea that we should sort of like allow schools to teach things that are far from unproven and that most scientists disagree with is, I think, quite a dangerous idea.
Now let's go over to Abdullah. Why do you feel it's important to have an Islamic school?
Yeah, I think the view that the rabbi just gave was slightly superficial, and I'm worried about this superficiality in our society generally, because what we experience is that children whose home life and school life are reflected tend to be self-confident. I think that the brother sitting next to you sort of reflected on that. It brings up self-confidence.
Right.
And children who are confident are then able to go out and participate in the wider society.
Yeah.
Also, you know, our school is not closed like that. They're not barricades. We have, you know, children in our school who have aunts, uncles, grandmothers, cousins who are not Muslim. We've got rabbis coming in, we've got bishops coming in, we've got seculars coming in. So we are not, it's up to the school, and we don't put up barriers. We don't put up barriers.
Okay. Would you agree with that, Rabbi?
No, I mean...
Do you think your point of view is superficial?
Not at all. I value Judaism and I value other faiths. But as I said earlier, I think it's very important that we don't separate the children, because otherwise, precisely because we're multi-ethnic and multi-faith, we need to bring the children together. Because otherwise, I really fear that in 30 years' time, we will look back at this moment when we separated our children and said, this is where we went wrong. We shouldn't build barriers. And it's a fallacy to say that if you send your children to a faith school, you're not segregating them. That's not the intention, but it is the effect. And I want my children to learn their religion from the home, but I want them to mix with other children 9 to 5, Monday to Friday.
Okay.
And I think Britain will be a better society because of it.
Well, thank you, Rabbi, and thank you, Abdullah, as well. Okay. So what do you make of all of this?
Religious faith is, first of all, a private matter, but it's also it's a belief in something that can't be objectively proved. So in a secular democracy, I don't think the state should be funding schools which teach one particular viewpoint as if it were true and as if it were accepted by the rest of society as a fact.
But those people believe it's true.
Well, I think... they should certainly have the option to send their children privately to an exclusively religious school if they wish to, but I don't think that taxpayers' money
should
be paying for exclusive religious teaching.
Christina, let me come up to you, Christina. So what's your idea on all of this?
Well, I'd like to see a faith school. Now, that's a school where it's supported by the faith communities. It's open to all faiths and none. But at the core of it, it's that acceptance that faith is important in people's lives, because I believe...
Do you mean in terms of spirituality?
Yeah, well, spirituality, yes, and also the code, the way that they live their lives. Children who are divorced from their religious setting will not perform well. They will feel isolated. So I think all
Don't
our schools...
Do you think that state schools do that anyway? Because... In religious studies, you do learn about all of the major religions,
in
anyway.
In good state schools, yes.
In good
state schools. And that's the key. If we had the ideal model, good RE going on in schools, good citizenship, then yes. But I think the point about faith schools being divisive, you have to take on board that there are maintained state schools which are equally segregated, because they could be, for example, 98% Muslim.
Right.
So what you need to look at there is how we can relate so that the children do meet with other faiths.
So you're agreeing with Rabbi? Really,
well, I'm agreeing that the children need to be communicating in some way. I mean, there are linked programs, good RE programs, have got linked programs with other schools in a different area. So some are multi-faith schools, or some might be...
So for you, you think faith is a good thing in schools, but we should learn about all faiths?
I think definitely we should learn about all faiths. How can we understand our neighbours and what makes them tick? if we don't understand the faith that underpins their beliefs.
Okay. What's your view on faith schools?
I'm fundamentally against faith schools. I think they're...
So you're a fundamentalist?
I'm not. Very good. No, I do agree with the rabbi. I think the rabbi's probably made the best point so far. Faith schools, they're socially divisive.
Did you go to a faith school?
No, I didn't, no.
Right.
So,
did you learn about different religions in
Yes,
your
I did. Yes, I learned about, in a set RS program, you spend an equal time learning on equal...
And has that made you more tolerant, do you think?
I think so. I think it gives me a better knowledge, and religion wasn't rammed down my throat. I've come to a judgment about my own religion, and it hasn't been forced upon me. And I really, really feel strongly about liberty. As soon as someone is born, they should have the liberty to make their own choice. And faith schools just do not give
people
that choice at all.
Now, John, you can have the last word on this one.
Well, the chap has just spoken the biggest load of garbage I've ever heard. He's never even been to faith school. I went to the Blue Coat School. It was a comprehensive, it was a faith school, Church of England. It now accepts Muslims, it accepts Jews and the people from other religions as well. We were taught other religions, the major faiths of the world, which I think every child should be taught. I think they should learn about creationism, but I think it should be within religious studies. I don't think it should be within science. But we should tolerate and we should get on. But the bottom line is, faith schools produce the best results. I was just having a chat here with Kwame. You only get one chance in life normally with education, and I'm not using my kids as a social experiment. I want them to go to the best school. I want them to have discipline. I want them to learn respect. I want them to wear a uniform and conform to that uniform, and I want them to get good results. So I'm with Kwame on that. There's nothing wrong with faith schools. Stop attacking them.
Next, where we all live. In the wake of the 7/7 bombings, politicians were quick to suggest that Britain had allowed the growth of so-called ghettos, small communities that group together and exclude mainstream society. Some even argue that the four suicide bombers and their radical views were nurtured in these small enclaves. But why do we tend to huddle together in our own ethnic groups? Here's Julian with more.
Thanks, June. Let's just look at the sort of facts here. And London's a very good example. This is a map of London with its 32 boroughs. And London is, of course, the model of the multicultural mixed society. Everyone gets along fine side by side. But as a matter of fact, in this city, like many others around the world, you find that people group together according to ethnic origin and so forth. So here, Brick Lane in the East End, for example, very roughly, we have a big Bangladeshi community. If we go to Clerkenwell, a little bit further in, there are lots of Italians, land of my father. Though you wouldn't know it to look at me. Green Lanes, Turkish, up here in North London. We've also had Hampstead Garden suburb, where you've got a large Jewish community over here. Let's move over quickly. We've got a large Irish community in Kilburn. Edgware Road, we have a lot of a big Arabic community. Indian community in Southall, which you'll probably all know about. And finally, Caribbean in Brixton. We could have put many, many more bricks on this map, but you see the point. The fact is that people do not choose to mix and blend in all together as a rainbow nation. People choose to gather with people they see like themselves. And that's true whatever their ethnic background. It's true of white and black, and it's true all over the world. Now the question is, how significant is this, and how can we cope with it, and does it threat multicultural society? Well, John, perhaps you can
take
up this.
Yes, I'll just incur the congestion charge as I cross London. Zaid, hello, can I squeeze in? Now, these communities, they incur a sort of ghetto attitude, don't they? They're enclosed. What do you think?
They do indeed. I can speak to the community of Bangladeshis in the East End, and I can say that what we have here in the East End is a ghetto, that we have a community that is insulated from the rest. I'm a school governor of a school a stone's throw from this venue.
I mean, can I ask you, for instance, the problems we had with 7/7, they started with this issue.
This
homegrown terrorism.
Absolutely. This area is a hotbed. It's a greenhouse propagating weeds. There are fundamentalist Muslims, there are Islamic jihadists here.
I mean, for instance,
community.
People would say in the past, wouldn't they, well, people commit crimes like this because of social deprivation. The thing that's changed is this sort of enclosed community, isn't it, that really doesn't allow people to breathe. I mean, have I got that right or wrong?
It's not just that, I think you're right, but that's not the whole story, that these are enclosed communities that don't allow people to breathe. But there is a penumbra of other issues around it.
Yep.
What we need to do is go to that block and tear it up.
Kick them into goal. June.
And spread it.
What do you make of Zia's comments?
Well, there is a bit of a particularity to at least Muslim communities. I'm personally an Arab, an Arab atheist, which is quite a rare breed nowadays. Yes. And in reality, there is a tendency towards, let's say, Arabs and other communities that are traditionally Muslims to focus on themselves and close themselves down. There are many technical reasons. For example, at least in England, you wouldn't socialize in a pub because of, well, you wouldn't have alcohol or anything, and that's like a main socializing event. But also, most mainly, I'd say there is a problem with the fact that as a community, compared to other communities, Arabs, we tend to focus a lot and identify ourselves a lot with the religion. That's why we don't talk about Arab community, we talk about Muslim
but
community.
But don't you think that that's the same with Judaism or Christianity? You don't think that that's the case with...
Judaism, probably, but I still find Judaism a bit more open, as the rabbi showed, than a lot of Muslims. For Christianity, it's been now about 100 years that Christians stopped taking seriously their own religion. And now, just looking at it, like...
I don't think Catholics would agree with that, do you?
Most Catholics, yes. If you look at how many humanists and secularists exist in places like France that are traditionally Catholic, there are many of them. They do not identify themselves with being Catholic.
Right.
They identify themselves being French, with being English, with
and
being...
And so you feel that's how people should identify themselves?
Exactly. I identify myself as Arab.
Well, I'm actually a Catholic. I define myself as an English Catholic, that is, a Catholic who happens to be English.
Right.
There's a reason it's called Universal, the Universal Church. But, I do think that multiculturalism could be a problem, in a sense that, you know, you may have racial divisions. But actually, I don't think that that's relevant to religion, because you can be black or white or Asian and still be a Muslim or a Hindu or a Catholic or whatever else. It doesn't really matter. It's irrelevant to the point. You know, religion's not relevant to culture. It's an accidental or an incidental thing to culture. So I think you're confusing two different issues here.
So you completely disagree?
I completely disagree. I think that religion is inclusive. I think all religions can be inclusive. I think that the way that this debate has often been polarised, as if, you know, religion is constantly intensely divisive, rubbish. Utter total nonsense.
Is it rubbish, Mina?
I think I agree with you, actually. I mean, I grew up, I'm probably the only northerner in this room, because we keep talking about London like it's the centre of the universe. But there actually is a whole country. It's not. Because what's interesting is that, I mean, I lived half my life up north, and I've lived half my life in London.
Yeah.
And I live back up north now after 18 years. And it is, you know, I live near Oldham. And and there are parts
of
Oldham.
Is that where you grew up?
No, I'm from Accrington.
Yeah.
But
ooh,
I live...
Ooh, you're really
you
going north.
But what's interesting about being up there in some... there are some places in Oldham that, you know, it's like being back in the 70s. Because it's bizarre how kind of segregated it is.
Right.
I mean, I grew up... I feel privileged to... I was born in this country.
Mm.
And I had... I feel privileged to have had a dual culture.
Yes.
I had a great, you know, state school education, and I'm bilingual, I grew up as a Muslim, and I had that within my house. I could speak to my mom in Punjabi,
yeah.
And I could go to school and speak
English. Yeah.
But I am... I suppose I'm a Pakistani woman.
Mm.
I don't... At any one time, I am something different. It's to do... Whether it's to do with your culture, your religion, your age, your...
Part
whether I'm a woman, what colour my hair is. I mean, our profession, I'm an actress. I mean, you're always something different. It depends on what are you showing at any one point. And I think they're not mutually exclusive, any of these things. And I think that, you know, to try and identify with all the different cultures, that is what's so rich about living in this country.
Right. Mm. So you think it works?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, Ian, would you agree with this? Is it rich because of the multiculturalism?
I think that there's I certainly agree the idea that there's a difference between religion and culture.
Yeah.
That's a very good point to make. But if the caricature on one side is a monoculture...
Mm.
Multiculturalism as the attempt to have all cultures is just the flip side of the same coin. It's still an emphasis on difference,
yeah.
Not on our similarities. Everybody keeps emphasising the differences, but not the similarities. And the bizarre idea that you could take little chunks of these blocks and just scatter them in some kind of mechanical blender, and end up with social harmonies.
So what do you think is the answer then?
Well, social engineering is not a solution, which is, it seems to be what you guys want to do.
But how do you stop these ghettos? How do you stop people only living around people like themselves?
Ghettos have come and gone because people are free. Brick Lane itself has had historic ghettos over and over again. Mm. There's a fantastic program on another channel the other night saying exactly that.
But don't you think that promotes more segregation?
Segregation sometimes happens for a reason. That people do move to an area because they know people there, there's relatives there, there's a certain trade there even. I mean, historically that's been the case.
But don't you think people should mix? My son's mixed in a way that I never did
because he's of this
generation.
Time now. We've got more job opportunities to mix, travel, be free. The bizarre thing in this country that advocates multiculturalism, it's the same country that doesn't advocate immigration.
Right.
Why not just massively double the population of Britain through immigration? That would mix everything up.
Oh, so you agree. Wow.
Well, there's plenty of space. I mean, it doesn't mean that everybody will get on, obviously. But that would certainly mix things up. And then we wouldn't have to bore each other rigid with the talk about multiculturalism.
Because it just happened anyway.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I think this is really interesting because I had an opinion before I came here. I have to say...
And you changed your opinion?
Kind of. Like, I'm listening to everyone's different
John,
point of view.
John, you're working.
No, I didn't say John.
Okay.
But I think, firstly, you just made the point about people living, like... Black people in one area, Asian people in another area.
Mm.
I think it's fear and education. A lot of people tend to stick around the same sort of community. When you're at college, all the black kids hang around together, all the Asian kids do.
Yeah.
Because people have perceptions of people.
Yeah.
And if you don't mix with people, you don't get to know different cultures.
Yeah.
You naturally stay away. Because
yeah.
you think, oh my God, I don't know those people. I don't identify with them. I don't want to be around them.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important from when you're young.
So what's your experience been?
I think for me, being mixed, I think at the end of the day, the way I feel about it is I grew up around white kids, black kids, Asian kids. And I think if I'd gone to a faith school, I think would have restricted. I mean, I'm not knocking them because I know people say, you know.
So you're the product of when it does work.
As in, if you go to secondary school and you mix with every culture, and if a kid gets picked on, I remember being at school and there was a little Sikh boy that they were making jokes about because he had a turban on. And what we got told was, the kids at school got told off and they got told in assembly why he wears it.
Yeah.
And he got educated.
Yeah.
If he'd been at a faith school, he would have been around all Sikh people nobody would have made...
I went to a faith school that never happened. I'm sorry. I went to a faith school, Catholic Comprehensive Faith School, and we got people of all different classes, all different colours, people of different religions as well. And if you had bullied anyone because of their religion, you would have been excoriated. I'm sorry. You would have been told off.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's education. If you're young and you haven't been brought up around a certain type of faith and people that dress a certain way, if somebody acts
so
bad,
what she's saying is you wouldn't have, in a faith school, you wouldn't have people that were different.
But don't generalise about faith school.
No, but I think you're generalising. You're going by your personal experience. Not everybody was lucky, perhaps as you were. There's a lot of kids that go to faith schools. I was talking to somebody earlier actually that said to me, they went to a faith school and they were drummed constantly with religion, and now as a 25-year-old, they don't want nothing to do with it. There's two sides to everything, and I don't think it's fair for you to say, because your personal experience was a good one, everyone's is.
Or yours.
Yeah, true.
Just in that case, support the schools that are good, that actually do support social cohesion. Don't support the ones that are not.
How do you define that?
Okay,
it's very hard, isn't it?
What about a group that's quite fundamentalist, or that's quite exclusive, or is actually having a policy? Make a law that says you must have 25% at least of all your pupils who are of another religion. Actually, I think most Catholic high schools, I can't speak of other, I think probably Anglican as well and other faith schools like that, actually already have that kind of a policy.
You think that would work with Catholic schools and C of E schools and in terms of Christian-based religions, but not necessarily with the other religions?
Why not?
Now, can I just say...
I'm asking you, think that would work?
I think it would work, because I think that British-born Muslims and British-born Hindus and people like that have grown up with tolerance and have grown up with inclusiveness, and they would put that in.
I think he's really naive. I'll say, I'm going to give a personal experience of this.
Oh, she thinks you're naive?
Do you know why?
Well, because, nothing like an insult.
No, with respect. I recently went to... actually, Brick Lane, we went to an awards show, the L Awards party. We were coming back, and me and my two friends, they're both black...
Yeah.
we were driving and there was a bunch of Turkish kids that were in the middle of the road at 1 o'clock in the morning, and they started shouting all sorts of black obscenities to us. And I was like, oh my God, my generation, we've grown around every culture.
Yeah.
It is despicable if our generation is racist. The racist, the generation before us, not that I'm saying it's acceptable, grandparents, they were probably in this country when they were just white people. Mm. But when there's our generation that are racist and something is terribly wrong, and it has to be education, it has to be mum and dad telling you it's wrong, and also at school. So I'm not being disrespectful to you, but I'm a young person, a young black person, and I know there's still racism and there's still stereotype. So obviously we've got a lot to do, but we've got to focus on the positive and not just sit here and talk about differences. There's things we've all got in common as well.
So you think to focus more on the similarities?
Yeah, totally. And educate people about things that they don't know about. And rather than saying Shabine is wearing a hijab and, oh my God, she looks like a terrorist, ask her why she's wearing it. Yeah. Let her explain why she wears it. Okay. And maybe you don't agree with it, but you may respect it.
Okay, fair enough. Julian?
Well, yeah, I'm actually sort of like loving this debate. We've got two people here who've got very different views, arguing the toss with each other, but actually finding things they agree on. But one of the things that I think comes up time and again in what we've said so far, which worries me a bit, is that sometimes it seems to be about whether religion is a good or a bad thing. And I don't think that's the proposition we're putting forward. This debate today is about the role of religion in public life. And I think everyone accepts that there are inclusive and there are open religious people. That's what it's about. Now, what we do about it, you could call it social engineering if you like, but social engineering is really just a way of abusing some kind of social change you don't like. The welfare state was social engineering. The NHS was social engineering. So the question is, let's get rid of that term. Just think about, is the particular thing we're wanting to change a good thing or not? And get rid of the abusive language.
Fair enough. Now, so far, we've proposed some radical ideas on where we live, what we teach, and the way we look. So if we stripped all the religion from public life, what's left? What is the glue that holds Britain together under this new model? Kwame, what does it mean to you?
First of all, I have to say, and I have to agree with someone over there who said, I perceive myself as tricultural.
Right.
I'm African, Caribbean, and British.
Wow.
If I'm going to be specific, I could be Ghanaian, Grenadian, and English.
Yes.
I can be any of those things at any time. I can be all of those things at one time.
Yes.
And what's which is great when it's the World Cup.
Yeah. Because then you never lose.
I ain't never losing.
You better be Brazilian too.
Yes, that's right. But I think what's important is that there are wonderful things about being English and being British.
Yes.
When I'm away in America, as I am quite often, actually this word ghetto that we seem to use, I find that British people kind of hang out together.
Yeah.
And we kind of separate ourselves from the Americans in many respects. And we think about our what we perceive as our superior sense of irony.
Yeah.
And we think about our national health service when there are people there that are dying. And all of a sudden, when we're away, in opposition,
from,
we find ourselves defining what it is to
be
British. That is whether whatever our ethnic origin or whatever our race is. And so in many respects, I'm pro finding the very positive things that there are about being
so
born here.
In a way, you agree with Max, to focus more on the similarities.
And what I suppose what I'm trying to say is I do not have to give up anything to be British.
Yeah.
I simply just have to find that which is positive in this country and say, hey, we share this together, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't have to, I can be as African or as Caribbean as I need be.
Yeah.
And this is another thing. We keep talking about this word multiculturalism and this word ghetto. It really hurts me because actually in reality, the reason why we as African Caribbeans found ourselves in ghettos was not because we chose to put ourselves there, was because there was, because we couldn't get out anywhere else. And then the councils were bunging us in the worst housing. And then all of a sudden I'm hearing all of this talk about, oh, you want to be there. I didn't want to be in the worst housing, thank you very much. I didn't choose to be there. So I think that post 7/7 we mustn't just jump into this whole thing of, oh my God, let's just integrate.
Mm.
Because actually sometimes what we mean when we say the word integrate is assimilate.
Mm.
And I do not believe in assimilation. I believe in integration.
Yeah.
I can be me and be we.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, Abdullah, can you be me in this country and be we at the same time?
As someone that converted to Islam, I found something bigger than nationality.
Oh.
I find that the fact that I found that nationality divided human beings. It caused people to say, this is not my interest, you're French, you're Rwandan, I don't care about your massacre, I'm British, I have British interests, or I have to support a war in Iraq because our soldiers are there. Why can't I be moral first? Why not morality beyond nationality? Why not let's look at the universal principles of human beings and we can live by those?
Don't you think that being British is also being moral? Why do you think there's a difference between the two?
Well, it's not the case that of just the identity of being British is being moral or immoral. It's the fact that the British government will go to war in foreign countries and say, it's your patriotic duty to support our troops. Yes, it was based on a lie. Yes, we're probably doing it for oil. But you know what? It's our boys. So let's support them.
But don't you think that's the British government, not the British people? There is a difference.
Yes, there is. But the British...
So if you were told to put your religion aside and to focus on your nationality as opposed to your religion and your faith, what would that mean to you and what would that do to you?
Well, for me, because... Islam is more than a religion for me, it's an ideology. And it's like going to a communist and say, do you believe in nationalism? They believe in their fellow comrades, the workers' class and the bourgeoisie. This is how they divide humanity, from their viewpoint to life.
Yeah.
And we as Muslims have a viewpoint to life, that we view the world as human beings. We don't divide each other based on our skin color or our geography or all these artificial identities of nationality.
So would the banning of symbols and stripping away religion suppress you?
Well, I think it shows that the secular extremists are actually intellectually defeated, the fact that they need to impose their ideas on people.
Wow. Wow.
And that...
Because for you, you don't feel the need to impose your ideas on people. Is that what you're saying?
No.
You're happy for everyone to live side by side.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll live with you, I'll participate with you, I'll work with you, I'll be your friend and so on.
Oh, how kind of you.
No,
thanks.
No problem. I'll leave my number at the door.
I'll be sure to pick it up.
But, you know, essentially, I'll discuss intellectually with you. If you want to agree with my ideas, fine. If not, we can still be friends.
Everybody's freedoms in this society depend on, to some extent, curbing other people's freedoms.
Mm.
That's just a fact.
Right.
I think, you know, everybody's got the right, and everybody is different.
Yeah.
You know, I think what's really absurd about our current sort of thinking around multiculturalism is the idea that we're sort of headed towards some kind of Benetton utopia.
Yes.
And that's not going to happen. People are not... Human beings aren't designed for unanimity.
You really believe that?
No, we're not. The history of... We're too different. We're just too different. And what we need to do is just find a way of accommodating that.
Accepting the differences.
Yeah.
So you don't think that people should try and live side by side?
Well, I mean, I don't agree with ghettos, but people have a right to live in them.
Right.
And I think people who...
Does that make sense?
Well, lots of things about human life don't make sense. Are you going to then legislate against everything?
Right.
Are you going to legislate against being overweight, against, you know, failing your exams? Are you going to legislate against everything that people do that just isn't in the best interests of society? People,
okay.
you have to limit it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, Gaunty, over to you. I'm scared. What are you going to say?
You won't believe this at all, but in my dim and distant past, I used to be a punk rocker, and there was a band from Birmingham called the Au Pairs, and they had a song, and it was called We're Equal But Different. And I think that is the bottom line, that in this country, I think Kwame was exactly right. We can all be different. We can have different religions. We can look different. We can have, you know, have different colours of our skin, but we are equal. But we need to remember we're British. That's why the Muslim guy, with the greatest respect, next year, is wrong. First and foremost, we need to discover what Britishness is, or Englishness, and we have to be proud of being British. That should come first, over and above religion. I respect your opinion, but I do feel that you're wrong. And that's what we need to do.
Okay.
Let's celebrate our diversity, but let's not kid ourselves we're all the same. We're not, but we're equal, but different.
Brilliant. Thank you, John. Okay. Now, let's meet someone who's actually doing something to unite us. She's called Gordana, and she's redesigned the Union Jack for the next generation. Let's take a look. Gordana, come through. Ooh. Round of applause. Hi. So, Gordana, you're here with your sister. What's your sister called?
Diana.
Diana, hello. Now, you redesigned the Union Jack. Why? Yeah.
Well, in my opinion, if Britain wants to promote new social changes and real values, then it needs to consider a new symbol.
So do you feel that this would best represent you more than the current flag?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk us through this? What does this symbolise?
Well, my intention was to create a sort of a marriage between the traditional British heritage.
Yeah, you've kept the colours.
Through the crown and the flag, with the new British personality, more oriented towards people and values. So this symbol represents Britain as a kingdom for everyone.
For everyone, okay.
Yes. It's a crown of unified, diverse and active people.
So people what do we think, audience? Would we be happy with this as a new UNICEF? Oh, dear. Thank you very much for coming. A round of applause for Gordana, everyone. Well, tonight we've made the case that multiculturalism is no longer the way forward for Britain. We've suggested a new blueprint, a model which removes religion from public life, a ban on religious symbols, faith schools, and an end to communities divided up according to religious belief. We should all unite behind the same set of common values, common language, and adopt the same identity. British. But has the debate changed the opinion of our audience? It's polling time again, everyone. If you like living in a country which encourages multiculturalism, then hold up your green cards. If you don't, then hold up your red cards. Well, I think it's fair to say that even more now like living in a country that encourages multiculturalism. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. You okay? Sorry, John. Well, that's it. Thanks to John and Julian and everyone in our audience. Join us next time when we ask you to think the unthinkable on Minefields. Bye for now.